Get ready. It's time to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we visit with an old friend and a guy who knows a lot about the golf swing. Steve Bourbon of Chelsea Piers joins us. So stay tuned and get ready as you Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we want to talk some instruction. Why not? Take a break from the PGA merchandise show and bring you all those good things. And we're always about game improvement. And the guy that knows a lot about that, well, we need to check on the weather in the Northeast as well. So we turn to our man, Steve Bourbon, who is a Tusky protege and a regular guy that's been around the game of golf, an instructor, and doing good things in NYC. And we welcome Burby back to the show. Thanks so much, making time. I really appreciate it because, you know, we've got a lot to talk about.
Hey, Keith, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to I haven't seen you in a while. I miss you for Toski's party. And, of course, Toski's got a 100th coming up in September, so I know I will at least see you then if I don't make a trip to the icy confines that are Chelsea Piers in New York City.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal up here right now, but till then, I can. I'll look forward to seeing next year at his 100th.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Crazy party. He's already told me, make sure you're there, and. I got some surprises like he always does. So, but you live with Tusk for a lengthy amount of time and learn from him firsthand. I mean, when I call you a protege, I mean, you're probably, well, Malaska's right there too, but it's a little bit different with Malaska. Because Malaska started out as a collegiate player, you also were a pretty darn good striper of the golf ball. But to get that experience to live with one of the teaching legends, and the, as I call him, the godfather of the golf swing, is super, super special.
Yeah. No. After his wife Lynn had passed, I moved in with him. I was down there for the winter time, and I spent probably a good 6-8 months with him. Basically every day, and it's just the kind of guy he was. He's big on having purpose. He's a huge giver of himself, and he'd done so much for me that he asked me if I wanted to stay with him for a while, and I said, Bob, when do you want me there?
Yeah, Tusky doesn't have to ask too many times. You know, you get that invitation. You need to take that opportunity. You need to be there.
Absolutely.
But this is not about Tusky this hour. Well, there'll be semblances of Tusky because of your teaching and stuff. But we have come across this new thing that you're working with called the Shock Force Trainer. And that was so amazing when I saw that. And then I saw some video of you working with a patient, I mean, an aspiring golfer. And it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a device that, I've been kind of tinkering around with the idea of force training, and I explain it a lot to students as though if you've ever seen the movie The Karate Kid, you know, we got the wax on, wax off, and he goes over to Mr. Miyagi's house to basically learn karate, and he's got him doing all these chores, and he's painting the fence, he's sanding the floor, and he's waxing cars, and he's using force and tension and pattern recognition, and brain science has shown us that that's the only language that your brain and body speak, and it's ancient technology, and we're just starting to realize why this stuff is so effective. And I saw this machine down in Chris Verna's office down in Boca Raton while he was working on my shoulder, and I said, Chris, I mean, this is great. I'm telling you about my shoulder and golf and working with tour players and all that. Are you going to tell me about this contraption you have here next to your table? What is this? And we started talking, and him and John Smoltz came up with this through another gentleman that they got involved with that helped them develop this, and they patented it, and they just got the patent to come through. And they have been working with golfers basically to help wire the sequence of the golf swing into into the muscles, the feel of the golf swing. Instead of us going through 1,000 different positions and looking at metrics and things like this, this actually teaches your body the choreography of a correct, fundamentally sound swing.
So this apparatus, as I look at it, it looks similar to something else I've seen, but it was not this extra movement. Now, what we're talking about is, and obviously we're playing without pictures here on the radio, but it's the theater of the mind. So we're going to try to get into people's minds more than one direction in this show. And bourbon, and nobody can do it better than bourbon, let me tell you, from that standpoint. But I've seen it before where it's just it's a pulley cable system, and you swing back and then you swing through. But I've never seen it where this is kind of a two-move machine. You have to take the pulley and you pull it down, and then you have to almost muscle it through the shot, if you will, to finish the shot.
Yeah, there's a way to increase or decrease the amount of pressure. You can start off with the least amount of pressure. And it's just this handle that hangs from this bar above you, and it kind of works much like a lumberjack press or something at the gym, where you have the cables and the wires that you pull on. And as you said, there's feet on the floor that you get your feet set on, and it allows you to grip this handle and start to make a golf swing. And as you swing back and you shift your weight and you swing down, as you start to try to release the handle and extend it to the wall, if you don't move sequentially correct, the tension resists you and it won't let you do it. So it actually, you know, for people who don't play golf, this will get you to feel what a fundamentally sound, orthodox, advanced feeling golf swing feels like before you even have the muscle memory to do it yourself. And it actually kind of, I call it, like, it kind of shows you where to dig for the feels. And it's a great tool for instructors to be able to stop a person in the middle of their golf swing, put hands on them in certain parts of their swing, and you say, do you feel what your right arm, how it's trying to early extend here? That's what you do when you swing a golf club. And it helps you to put their arm back into flexion and lag their get their right wrist in more of a lag position, and show them what that feels like in their body, so they know how to what feels to look for when they try to practice. It's really pretty great.
Well, Steve, you used a term that has been debated for many, many years, and that is muscle memory. Now, memory is really what people think of from their brain. Can muscles really remember? Is it a misnomer, really, that term?
Well, it's a kinesthetic memory. It's like tying your shoes. You can't intellectually conjure a kinesthetic memory you've never had. That's like trying to describe to somebody what a massage feels like who's never had one. Try to do that in words, and you'll understand what my job is like. But what's cool about this machine is it actually starts giving you practical experience that you can quote-unquote remember. And it's not intellectual memory. That's the problem with golfers, is they all try to go, okay, I got to keep my hand here, keep my head here, I've got to do this, clear my hips. Your body can't hear any of that. It doesn't speak English. It only speaks force and tension, and it only learns through experience, kind of like walking. You get up, you fall down. You don't just start at running. So you have to go through. This is why Totsky's teaching philosophy was so effective. He was big on joints in line and crawl, walk, run. And what's crazy is as we go back, we start to see more and more of this technology and biomechanics and these metrics. We're starting to see that he had it right all along. is amazing. And all I'm trying to do is just go to modern science to validate it. And I think what Bob credits me for is being able to expand the words and the understanding of the context of the golf swing, of why and with what that we have to do certain things with in the swing. And this machine is as good as anything I've ever used to help people do that.
Yeah, I think that to Bob's point, really, is Burby has this ability to talk to the every woe man in language they can understand. So that is paramount, because that is the difficult part of teaching. People think, it's really simple. I watch what's going on. I watch the pros. I do this. I do that. It doesn't work out that way, right? So from an instructor standpoint, to get that methodology into the golfer's mind so they can get it into their body is a challenge, needless to say.
It is. And I think to what Bob discovered, and you see this in all forms of things. Here, to coin a phrase, it's in the immortal words of Ronnie Van Zant, the more simple you keep things, the more people you can reach.
I think that's true. I mean, I you know, you pretty much are, even though on this show you talk more than most people realize, but you know, you are a man of a few words that way. And I think that, you know, it's a direct relationship to the teachings of Toski and everything that you've learned, because Toski is all about feel and touch, and why mm-hmm. wouldn't you move your body? And, you know, and having Mike Malaska on the show is interesting, because Mike was a very accomplished player, All-American in college, and certainly came close to being successful on the Pro Tour, and then got into teaching and instruction, and is very, very successful, been a Teacher of the Year, which is, you know, not given to just anybody. So it speaks volumes for one hand, but he's always talking about that. But that's because that's how golfers get hurt. They, you know, they knot up their shoulder, or their back goes out of whack. We see this from professional golfers and stuff. You know, it's more about the fluid movement, if you can do that.
Yeah. It's really the culmination, like, of anything. You got to break things down to what they are in their nature. And I have a big, that whole fluidity that you're talking about stems down to three simple components that I call the carbon of the golf swing: the grip, the width of your arms, and your pivot. And when your joints are in line and you start to blend the sequence of your swing together in a crawl, walk, run manner, if you will, it's amazing how little things hurt or they get injured. Because you're starting to understand what the components of a swing are and how to piece them together. Because it's not just one thing. There's three things you've never done by themselves correctly, let alone together at high speed.
Yeah, it's interesting because talking with people and watching them and being a pseudo teacher, I know enough to be dangerous from that standpoint, you know, ball position and such. But the ball's not there. You say, okay, take a swing. And this person could have a beautiful swing, but as soon as that little white pill is put in front of them, the intimidation factor kicks in or whatever. So rather than just swinging through with your swing, they stop at the ball.
Yeah, and I, for the longest time, I couldn't understand what that was. And I started studying this stuff, and it was actually, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I used to teach and travel on tour, and I've taught at like places like Shinnecock and all these highfalutin places, and I was used to dealing with golfers that understood the golf lingo. And it wasn't until I got to Manhattan and I started teaching people with like a Groupon that were like, I'm going to learn golf today. And they had no idea about any of the language and things. And when I would try to get to swing their left arm, for right-handed golfers, I would try to get their arms to swing through the ball into their extension position, they couldn't do it. Their eyes would get big. They'd stop. They'd start standing up. They'd start folding their left elbow into the chicken wing thing. And any time you hit a stationary object with an extended joint, it triggers a fight-or-flight instinct. And I had no idea. I'm watching people. I wish I had a GoPro on my hat while I was showing people's facial expressions while they were trying to get through these positions. I would ask people, why do you do that? Why are you reacting? I had a guy step out of the sequence that I was trying to pull him through with his right foot. And I said, why did you do that? He looked at me and he was like, I have no idea. And, you know, a year or so later, I'm reading Brain Science book and I find out that it's a fight or flight instinct. You damage a joint, you can't fight or flee. It sounds so stupid to say in a golf lesson, but it's written on your DNA. It's like if anyone's ever had their knee hyperextended or an elbow thing like that, your brain, your fight or flight instinct has veto powers over everything you agree to intellectually that you understand that's supposed to be correct in the golf swing.
That's unbelievable. We're Steve Bourbon heading to our first break. He's spending the hour with us. We're fortunate, and you will be too. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be right back. I'll keep my pants on.
We We are back with Steve Bourbon, a renowned instructor teaching at Chelsea Piers in NYC. Yes, New York City has a driving range, a teaching facility, and getting more technology, which Steve will talk about a little bit later in the show. But yes, Chelsea Piers, I remember when it opened, and like take this pier and you make this long, put the nets out there so the balls can't go in the water, keep it contained, and you're hitting out over this pier. It was the most unique thing I had seen, Steve, at that time, and it's still one of the very unique things in the golf world.
Yeah, it's really a phenomenal place, and it keeps evolving as the technology starts to evolve, and we've got now all these launch monitors at every single station. It's got this in-range technology where you can play games, and you can compete against people in your on the same floor. You can compete against the leaderboard from all the other facilities in the world that have the in-range technology added. It's a lot like the kind of stuff you see at like Topgolf and the games that you can do to targets and the long drive contests and things like that. It's getting really fun to actually go and practice golf now.
Oh, I can do ugly birds or whatever that game is. Knock the birds out and such. Well, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Topgolf. So Topgolf is unto itself. Interesting phenomenon, right? But it's not about the golf when you go to Topgolf. It's really about the food and beverage and hanging out and that, you know, that whole thing. Although a number of people do convert to the golf course, but it's totally different, and it's a very difficult transition for them a lot of times.
Yeah, it really is, because there, a lot of these people are just going there with friends or a company outing and things like that, and they're going there to have fun, and they aren't real serious with golf instruction. So we've kind of, you know, tried to go and see what kind of works best in all those worlds. You got like we take all the technology, and we've got the food and beverage thing as well. But you know, at Chelsea Piers, we also have an incredibly large junior program that keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. And we have a fantastic top 50 instructor, Michelle Malia, who's running that for us. And we also have the most successful beginner school in Manhattan. It's the only place you can go to actually watch your golf ball fly 200 yards. Everything else is like an indoor facility where you're hitting to a wall 10 feet in front of you. And one of the things we do is we have like Golf 101s and Beginner School 1 and Beginner School 2. And what we try to do is teach people these fundamentals that Mr. Toski taught me in the very format that him and Jim Flick invented, the golf school.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, because that's been more than 50 years ago, and it still transcends. I mean, it's interesting, and I just remember really enjoying my conversations with Jim Flick, Mr. Flick, on the show, and he always called me Coach, you know, I appreciate that. but just so interesting, because he was such a nice guy. It's not that Toski's not a nice guy. It's different. Mm-hmm. So for those guys to work at the same school, but, you know, you also had John Jacobs and a lot of renowned instructors. A lot of them are in at least the Instructors Hall of Fame. But it's, that dynamic is so interesting, because you can learn a lot. And I know that Mr. Flick worked with Nicholas and different well-known professional golfers over the years, and always had some great insight from that standpoint. But to convey that to the general public, if you will, to Mr. and Mrs., you know, it's different, a little bit different.
Yeah, and they really kind of complemented each other really well. And it's, I met Jim once. I talked to him a bunch of times on the phone. I met him once. He'd come up to Shinnecock. And I actually got, I snuck out someplace where I could get a cell phone at where we could use it, because I was like, I have got to get Toski and Flick on the phone together at the same time. And it was so funny, because he used to call Bob Senior Max. And it was this, they went to like Spain or something, and they were, you know, their families or their, you know, they took their wives and they would vacation together, and they went on this tour, and this guy that was leading the tour, Jim kept calling him Senior Max, and it drove the guy crazy. So he just didn't like it, and Jim kept calling him that. And so whenever he would, you know, like call Bob on the phone, he'd always go, Senior Max. just start laughing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he was very, very humorous. Miss him dearly and such. But it's, you know, it's part of that, I don't know, innate thing, which you know, I want you to talk about when we come back from this bottom of the hour break with Steve Bourbon, renowned instructor in his own right, because not everybody can do what you guys do. And it's so, so important that you get in front of a PGA teaching professional to improve your swing. We'll be back after this bottom of the hour break with Steve Bourbon.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Steve Bourbon. He is at Chelsea Piers in New York City, but as he mentioned earlier in the show, he's been in Shinnecock. He's been in a lot of places, and he even lived with Toski for a while. And if you can get through that, let me tell you, you were going some there. And you mentioned in the last segment that Jim Flick would call Toski, and you know it's so interesting, this camaraderie that all these guys have. And we're having breakfast, and it's Bob's birthday, and Malaski's at the table. And I think Bourbon's at the table too, but I'll let Burby confirm that because he became a blur after a while because Malaska dials a phone number and he says, yeah, okay, yeah, he's right next to me. One second. And hands the phone to Toski, and it was Jack Nicklaus because Mike Malaska has worked for Jack's schools for a long, long time. So he has Jack on speed dial apparently. So, to hear those two talk and stuff, but it's so interesting. And you're in that realm too, right? Being an instructor, it's special guys and young ladies that have this ability to do this professionally. And, you know, and I say professionally, you know, actually make a living doing it.
Yeah. It's funny when you're kind of in that inner circle as you are with Toski and those guys. You know, you get exposed to people like Gary Player and Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and I don't know if you remember a few years back after Lynn passed, his wife, Jack Nicklaus and Barbara had called to kind of give their condolences and stuff, and Bob was going to headline the PGA Teaching and Coaching Summit that year. And Bob said, hey, do you mind if me and my protege come up and sit with you for a little bit and talk about the golf swing? I'd like to kind of have your comments looped into this presentation I'm going to do for all the top teachers in the country. And we get up there, and I get to meet Jack Nicklaus. I'm sitting in his office, and I'm like, my God, there's Jack. They got the greatest player in the history of the game, and arguably the greatest player-teacher combo in the history of the game, and me talking about what they like and don't like about golf instruction. And I we start talking and I was like, Jack, I go, do you ever try to like stay in your spine angle or clear your hips or anything? He didn't even let me finish the question. He'd just go, no, why the heck would I do that? And I was like, well, you hear all this stuff today and people talking about this stuff. I was like, when I was playing, all I ever really felt was my right hand in my chest. He goes, well, Steve, It's kind of like when you play. He's a big tennis player. He goes, Steve, it's kind of like when you play tennis. You swing your arms, you follow your feet. I go, yeah, but Jack, the ball's moving and your feet are moving out of place. He goes, well, you know, it's like throwing a baseball. I go, yeah, well, same problem. He goes, well, you ever hit a baseball? I go, Jack, it's the same problem. So he stops and he just looks at me. If you've ever had those steely eyes lock on you, it's intimidating. And I wasn't even on a golf course. I'm sitting in his office, and I've got this whole thing on audio tape. And he looks across the table at me, and he goes, Steve, let me ask you something. He goes, did you brush your teeth this morning? I said, yeah, of course. He goes, what'd you use? In my hand, see? And he stops, and I didn't realize I'd already walked into the bear trap. And he goes, Steve, how'd you get to the bathroom? And I was like, oh, I walked. And the moral of the story was anytime you use your hands, you use your feet first in order to do it. And I had never thought about it. I just took it for granted. And I was like, that's why you're Jack Nicklaus. Like, I never even occurred to me to that stuff. But those were the kind of stories that I would be exposed to, and the kind of players that that we got. He's like, you know, you're a friend of Bob's. Huh? Well, did he teach you this? And they'd, you know, Tommy Bolt shared with me what Ben Hogan taught him about the golf grip. That was a crazy story. Did I tell you that one?
No, go ahead, because Tommy Bolt is one of our favorites on the show, because not only did Toski know him, but I know that Peter Kessler, who used to be at the Golf Channel, has a ton of Bolt stories. So this will just add to the repertoire.
Here is my Tommy Bolt story. And he's sitting there, and he's walking across the parking lot, and Toski looks at me, and he goes, oh, Jesus, you're going to meet Tommy Bolt today. And I'm like, oh, yeah, all right, great. So I go up, and Bob goes, Tommy, I want you to say hello to a good friend of mine. And he ducks out of the way. And I'm like, where's Bob going? And I reached out to shake this man's hand. He sidesteps my hand, slaps me right in the belly, and knocks every stitch of wind out of me. He grabs my hand and starts shaking. He goes, put her there, son. Any friend of Bobby's is a friend of mine. I can't breathe. And he's going, what do you say there? And he goes, what's the matter, son? Cat got your tongue? And I'm sitting there. I can't breathe. He had, I don't know if you ever saw Tommy Bolt's hands. He had the biggest pair of hands I've ever seen on a human being. And my hand was like a baby in his hand. I got a picture of him on my Instagram page swinging a golf club. You can't see the grip. His hands were that big. They ended at the grip. So we go out, and he goes, you mind if my protege and I watch you play a few holes? And he goes, I don't care what you do. And it was, you know how gregarious Toski is. He never he was very different and just
reserved
and kind of didn't just let Tommy have the stage because he was older and that's kind of what you did. And he goes, all right, son. He goes. Why don't you come back here and tell me where old Tom's aiming? And Bob goes, look at his grip. Look at his grip. As I'm walking and I'm watching his grip, and his hands were massive, and there weren't any knuckles and V's pointing anywhere. It looked like his forearms and his hands were molded onto the grip. He didn't have a wrinkle on any of his pants. His shirt was perfect. And I get behind him, and he's got like a 7-wood or something. And he's and he goes. And he used to talk with his teeth together, like, you know, like this. And he'd go, son, why don't you tell me where old Tom's aiming? I said, right at the flag, Mr. Bolt. And he goes, now watch this. Old Tom's going to cut that flagstick in half. And I cleaned that up for you. And he pulls the club back. He swings the club back. Toe opens right up to the toe-up position. Gets up to just below his shoulder. His left heel comes off the ground. He plants it down. He swings down. And he hits this ball right straight at the flagstick. And it never moved. And he nicked the flagstick. He actually hit it after telling me he would cut it in half. And I'm sitting there with my mouth open. Bob's falling out laughing over there. And he goes, boy, I tell you, I just can't hit it anywhere anymore. And I lost it. I was like, oh, my God. And it was just being around guys like that. And he changed how I teach the grip. He came over to me and he said, son, he goes, you golf pros today are ruining the game. He goes, what are you telling these poor old sods? What the knuckles and the V's point look like pointing over here and over there based on where you're standing at. He goes, son, last time I checked, and he showed me his hands, he goes, the calluses were on this side. And he goes, besides, how can you tell what something feels like by looking at it?
I'm glad you cleaned it up, because I've never heard a Tommy Bolt story. Everybody cleans it up for radio, so I really appreciate the FCC will not be making any phone calls to yours truly. So that is appreciated, but that's true, because Tommy was known for throwing some expletives around.
He could do it from that standpoint.
So I never met Tommy Bolt, so I don't know the size of his hands, but I did meet Arnold Palmer, and I did have the opportunity to shake his hand a few times. And I felt like they were being swallowed up as well, because I'm over 6 feet tall, and I don't have I have piano fingers, so my hand is kind of long. It could be deemed as bigger, but it's not like those guys. And you know, Arnie was raised on a farm, so he had farm boy hands, and it was it was everything you could do to not have your fingers broken when he shook your hand. But that's where I go with he has the biggest hands I've ever seen. Besides football players, I covered the NFL for a long time. Those guys have some huge hands, but they're also huge human beings. So,
indeed. Yeah, he was a sweetheart. I got to meet him twice, and him and Bob would all. Did Bob ever tell you the first time he ever played in a pro event? Arnold Palmer played with him and Ted Kroll.
He may have, but you can certainly tell that because I'm not sure everybody who's listened to this show has heard that. So,
Him and Teddy Kroll. Arnold had just finished. He won the national amateur, turned pro, and he's over there kind of power huffing cigarettes down. He goes, "You know, the kid looks kind of nervous, Bob. Why don't you go over there and settle him down a little bit?" And he went over there and he started telling Arnold some jokes and trying to loosen him up. And they get out there and they play. And, I think Teddy Kroll shot like a 69. Bob shot like a 68. And they're watching him play and they're taking these really big divots. And Teddy's looking at Bob. He goes, "I don't know if this guy's going to be that good of a player with how deep a divot he takes." And Arnold ends up shooting 65. And Bob looks at Teddy and he beats both of them. He goes, "Teddy, I think this kid's going to be a hell of a player even with the deep divots." And Arnold never forgot how nice he was to him. So every time, I would go up to him and say, "Hey, I'm Bob Toski, told me to say hello to you." He put his arm around me. He just treated you like you belong. That was just Arnold, you know. He was such a nice guy. And he'd always remembered. Even when I did that roast for Toski, boy, I wish I knew you then, man. You would have had a blast at that thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Arnold sent a letter, and Peter Kessler read. He got Peter Kessler to MC, and all these guys came from all over the world that had worked with him before. And Arnold, man, he wrote this funny letter and kind of needled him a little bit. But it's just like ever since then, you know, Arnold was just Arnold. He was just the nicest guy.
Yeah, he had a long memory, that's for sure. He was he was the king for a reason. There's no question about that. And growing up, you were either Arnie's Army or you were for that guy Jack, and we didn't like that guy Jack. So it's you know, having had the opportunity to meet and to be around both of those guys over time is it has definitely been interesting, especially when they do course openings. You know, then they're like, "Hey, here we go." From that standpoint, I was in North Carolina one time with Arnie at a course opening, and then of course with Jack, and Jack had opened a few. I was at a couple of those, including one in Delaware. And my most famous Jack Nicklaus story that I usually don't tell openly because of where it actually occurred was at this course in Delaware. And I'm in the men's room because I had the time to visit the men's room, and I'm in the center urinal for those playing along at home. Sorry, ladies, that's what we call them, you know. So I'm almost finished doing what I'm doing, and who comes up next to me? Jack. So to say, I was in the same men's room as Jack Nicklaus at the time, and I was there first. Didn't follow him in there for the record, but that was pretty. It's a story that sticks with you if you know what I mean. But we're with Steve Bourbon, renowned instructor, just good guy. We've become very, very good friends over the years because of Toski. Got to thank Toski for a lot of stuff. And I met you at Bob's party. I think that was the first time. Well, that was a number of years ago, but you know, at one of Bob's birthday parties. He's had a few of them over the years, but he said, this is my protege, or you know, whatever he calls you. You know, usually we're called knuckleheads, but we have learned to be quiet when Toski's talking.
That's right.
Sometimes it bleeds in. You're like, "Oh, I want to say something," but you know, you let you know, especially when we go out to breakfast. We're at first watch. You know, this will happen. And when we go to see him in September, let the other guy get in trouble for speaking.
Right. Yeah. I was so well trained to finish his sentences for him. He goes, "I know you know it now, Steve. Let them learn." I'm like, "Okay, sorry."
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah. I tell you, that's what I'm saying. I give you a lot of kudos. I mean, I've stayed with Toski, but it's only been for, you know, less than a week, each time. So that's one thing. But, you know, we love the Crow's Nest and all that special stuff that is at the Toski estate. But, you know, to have lived with him for that long a time, you must really have some scars that have healed. I haven't seen a lot of scars on you lately. So over time, they say time heals all. And I'm guessing, you know, because you first went to do that, I have to believe, just being the wanting to know person that you are, that you may have had some, you know, some nicks and cuts and bruises along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was the guys that who really know him that were there in the beginning when I was with him, they would just talk about the legendary beatings that Bourbon would take. He goes, I'm just glad when I go down there, if you're there, because I know I'm not going to get it near as bad as you. And I always did. And it was just like, but I'd always come back because I just knew it was just the psychology of him. I knew what he was trying to do, trying to help me. And I had heard stories about him since I was a little kid and all of that stuff. Cause my dad sent me, cause you got to find Toski.
Yeah. There's no malice with Bob. I mean, he's just a straight shooter, which I greatly admire and try to be myself and live by those morals and standards that, you know, he certainly grew up with. He's a bit older than us, obviously, but you know, certain things stay with you and Toski's teaching have lasted and will outlast him. And, you know, the guys like you that carried on in Alaska, and there's other guys in there too, because it's so simplistic. That's the thing. And even when Bob comes on a regular basis, because he just breaks things down so easily, you're like, it just can't be that simple, right? It just can't be, right? It's like, have you ever danced? Yeah. Have you, would you stand here with your feet and you just move your upper body? No. You know, it's like, you know, all these things like, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, he states the obvious when it's not so obvious to you. And it is simple, but it's not easy, as he likes to say.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But you know, your learnings and your teachings, because he does call you a protege, which is why I call you protege, because I had no idea you put in so many laps and all those reps over time.
Oh, yeah. I met him in 2000. God, I spent, first 10 years, it was just like went by in a blip. And, I remember I was down there one day with Ken Duke and Brian Varsi, and I was trying to figure out. And Ken looks at me and he goes, what do you think he's going to say today? And I looked at him and I was like, man, if I could tell you that, I wouldn't have to keep coming down here every winter.
True. I saw Dukey at the PGA Merchandise Show. He was over at Newton. Our guy, Aki, who makes these Newton shafts, are phenomenal. Got a chance to talk with Duke, and like, man, you don't call me, but you don't text me back, nothing. He says, what number you have for me? I said, I have this number. He says, I haven't had that number for a while now, so here's the new number, call me. And I'm like, oh, okay, now I'll take a lot of those words I said about you back, you know, and I'll try not to use them again, and now that I have this correct number, I'll reach out to you, and I will probably do that sometime next week. But that aside, That is the circle of Toski. I mean, it's just he got Duke in the winner's circle in a PGA Tour event, and it happened to be the same one that Bob had won under. It was a different name, but still in Hartford. So and then Ken's been pretty successful on the Champions Tour and doing all the stuff he does. He has a fantastic charity event, which we're going to try to get to this year, and you know, different stuff like that, because he means well. So you know, when you win all that kind of money, you know, you build a new house like Kenny did, and some other stuff. So.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
It's kind of the victor.
Exactly. To the victor goes the spoils. Exactly. And our spoils this hour is Steve Bourbon. Yeah, indeed. You can tell the good guy that he is. He's in the frozen tundra that is New York City. I didn't ask him about his new mayor, how that's going on and stuff. I know the trash is piling up and such, but we'll leave that for another time. Could be the next segment. We're not sure, but we're about to wrap up the show. We got one more segment to go with the mastermind behind Chelsea Pier. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Trey Cool from Green Day, and we're teeing it up with Keith Jones like we always do. It's a habit we can't stop.
We are back to wrap up the show. It's been a pleasure to spend time with a buddy, Steve Bourbon, renowned instructor, a Toski protege, and the guy running the show at Chelsea Piers and New York City, and fantastic facility being upgraded with technology and stuff. So I know Stevie's excited about that and is work in progress and stuff. And boy, the way that New York City gets blasted with snow these days, I don't know how long it took to dig out to get you guys open, but you know, there must have been so many people in line to get back to that facility.
Yeah. And then when the temperature hit like minus 13, it kind of slowed down a little bit. But it's the wind that was really like, we're right on the Hudson. And when that wind gets going, they got to lower the nets. And, you know, it can get pretty crazy out there.
You know, for the way the Hudson froze up a little bit, you guys could have just lowered, you know, not had any nets and let the golf balls go a little further and, you know, inspired some of the golfers, you know.
Sure, if you can hit it to New Jersey, you get a free appetizer or something.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you're serving food. Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a great promotion. There you go. See, now you're onto something. He's always thinking. See, that's bourbon is always thinking. He's thinking so much that he now has a YouTube channel. I want to mention that. I actually watched one of the putting videos, which I saw you with the string. So I'm going to do that next time when I'm on the course. I'm going to take a little string with me and put it right up there from the hole back to where my ball is, and I'm going to use that string to – do you think I can get away with that? You think they'll let me do that in regulation play?
Sure, yeah. Just don't take it out on the golf course with you.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant on the golf course.
Yeah. No tournaments.
No tournaments. But, you know, technology's bled in. It's interesting you said no technology because there are companies like ShotScope out of Scotland that are developing these – flight monitors that are going to be around the $200 range and you can take with you. I mean, this kind of technology that's happening is astounding. And range finders obviously are a thing upon themselves. And, you know, just technology is now allowed on the professional tours and such.
Yeah. It's like, you know, helps with the pace of play and things like that out there. And, cause you still, I mean, even if you know what the yardage are, you still have to hit the shot. So it's and the technology stuff. With I see a lot more launch monitors, like mini launch monitors and things like that, out there with the amateurs and things like that. And if you can, if you know how to read the metrics and apply them to your golf swing, hey, more power to you. It's a great feedback tool.
Yeah, there you go. You can make some more money giving those kind of classes because you see these numbers and you think, oh, okay, here's my swing speed, here's my ball speed. How does that translate into what I'm doing?
Right, like what physical skill do I do that influences those numbers? And that's what I use it for, because a lot of the people that I'm teaching in Manhattan have day jobs, and they don't really study the golf swing or know what they're looking at. And like I said, the more simple you keep things, the more people you'll be able to reach. That's why, like you mentioned, my YouTube channel, it's Steve Bourbon Golf, but it's known as the Power of Three, like. Grip, width, pivot, swing, turn, shift, crawl, walk, run. Like the brain loves threes. Like two isn't enough, four is too many. And there's science behind like the brain being drawn to three. And that's what Toski, and this is stuff before we had any of this science, Bob, like he just developed this. And he said, well, it just makes good common sense. I'm like, Bob, this is all being validated by modern science. And he's like, well, good. It's nice to know that the old man was on the ball.
This power of three, as we close out the show, Burby, this power of three, where does it come from? What is it?
It's basically, you know how they got, like you say, ABCs, one, two, three. It's like you can write C, spot, run, or you can write War and Peace. It's all fundamental skills. So that the power of three is the what I call the carbon of golf. There's nothing lower than grip, width, pivot, and everything else. In a golf swing, the flaws of it I can draw back to a deficit in one of those three areas, the grip, the width, or the pivot mechanics. It's really just how you blend it. Everybody that does it a little bit differently, but it's really the blending of these things, and you got to meet people where they're at with these skills, which is either in the crawl level, the walk level, or the run level, which is the more advanced. And that's really what the Power 3 is all about.
I'm anxious to hear at some point how many runners that you have there, because usually it's the crawl or the walk. Everybody wants to run, but we'll save that for a different time. But I have to tell you that it's been a pleasure to have you on. And we, in three words, got to go. So I couldn't help myself. We had to do it. We had to do it. But with Steve Bourbon, this has been my guest on T-Dub Keith Jones. We're just out of time. We got to go practice. Like, Burby's got to go teach and do all the kind of stuff that he does with the athletes. But practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.